Take me where the promises are real. The 7 a.m. meeting. My name's Tim and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chips Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they established their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, we'll hear our speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Tim W. is giving up his home group meeting tonight. He's a member of the 12-step Titan group over at Biscayne, Mondays at 8 p.m. Sobriety date is December 2nd, so I guess you couldn't bear to go through another Christmas doing what you were doing. So glad to have you here. Please tell us all about it.
Thanks, Tim. My name's Tim. I'm an alcoholic. I think we got sobriety dates mixed up. My sobriety date is actually May 15th, 2010. It's okay. I didn't want to go through another Christmas drunk. Christmases are bad in my life. I have sponsees, and I have a sponsor that I don't call enough or utilize enough, but I try. There are not many drugs in my story, so I'm sorry. And there's not a lot of adventuring in my story, which I'm also sorry. And I appreciate everyone being here on Monday night, holiday. I'll try to make this quick and to the point. Let's see. I am an Atlanta native. I am the son of a recovered alcoholic who has passed away 2 years ago, Christmas, and a mother who we think was an alcoholic before her stroke, who also passed away this last Christmas. Again, Christmases are not my favorite. I have brothers and sisters in this program. I come by this program very honest. My grandfather died of this disease, and countless uncles that I never met did as well. I was born, like I said, here, moved around a lot, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about how I came to this program, what it took for me to get to this program, both mentally and physically, and how my life has been since. So much like any person, and I've met in these rooms, I kind of felt different growing up. I don't know what it was. I can't really identify what it was for sure, but I do know that I just never really fit in. I always yearned for attention or just never felt like I could be who I was. And anytime I was who I was either getting yelled at, ignored, or structured, or in trouble. I was very heady as a child. I read a lot. I'm an extrovert. I like to explore and experiment, and I really enjoyed getting to know people. I'm the youngest of four. I have an oldest brother and two sisters in the middle. I was exposed to things about 6 to 8 years ahead of my time because of that, so I kind of grew up fast. I learned all the fun words you're not supposed to say as a kid by the time I was 6 or 7, and learned that getting in trouble was a great way to get attention. And I used that as a blueprint in my life for a long time. I'm the child of a latchkey kid, one of the original ones. My parents were divorced. My eldest brother was to have the marriage baby, and I was to save the marriage baby, and it did not work. So my parents were divorced when I was 8 months old, and my mom was a single mom with 4 kids, trying to raise them in the 70s in Atlanta. It was tough. It's an amazing woman, and I've come to realize that she did the absolute best she could, and I do not blame anyone or anything for my circumstance other than myself and my life now. And I'm grateful for the 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th, 9th to validate all of that. Dad was a pretty selfish alcoholic, a raging alcoholic, some would say, until he got sober when I was 15. Prior to that, I had a couple of emotional issues. We had a neighborhood pedophile that decided he really liked taking photos of young boys in interesting situations, like shaving and doing all kinds of like adult-themed things. And I fell prey to that for a short period, honestly just a few weeks, and realized something was weird, God acting in my life, doing for me what I couldn't do even as a child. And I sort of got out of that situation, and I really didn't think much about it in life until this man raped and murdered a very small boy, and when the FBI arrested him, found a whole bunch of photos of me and some friends and people, and the FBI showed up at my mother's doorstep to see if I would be willing to come forward and testify. And at 6, I had no idea that this was really weird, but at 10, I did. And my mom was very shocked about it, and it kind of put me in a shame spiral for a long time. So I became pretty despondent. I had a nervous breakdown when I was 11, started therapy, and was introduced into Peachford at 12. I was in Peachford for 2 years, from 12 to 14. So when you guys have done the 90-day program there, it's nothing. 2 years, I call that place home. But it didn't make me right. It made me aware of a lot of things. And when I was moved to the adolescent unit, there were a lot of drunks and junkies there. So I was highly aware of what alcohol and what drugs does to people. And I avoided them, amazingly, for a while, for a long time. I held out. Pretty stubborn. When I got out of Peachford, I got into some trouble. Again, I had a hard time finding quality friends. I found a lot of the outcasts and the people who didn't really fit in. I didn't like fitting in. I thought people who fit in were nerds or geeks, and I just didn't want to be in that crowd. I liked sort of being different. I didn't have a lot of identity that I would own up to, so I liked the tough guy identity. Anyway, I ended up getting arrested as a child for doing some really stupid shit, and wound up in the United Methodist Children's Home for a year as well. So most of my youth, and I hate to say this, but the reason I tell this in my story is because most of my youth was not at home. I was away. I've been kind of on my own since I was about 11 or 12, just off and on. When I got out of the children's home at 16, I could drive, so I was never at home. I don't know if you guys have any children, but 16-year-olds rarely like to be at home. My mom, out of the blue, when I turned 18, had decided to move. All of her kids were grown at that point, and she was moving to North Carolina, and I had 3 weeks to pack up my stuff. And did, and moved to North Carolina for about 4 months, and was in love with a girl that I met in high school, and just could not live without her, and no one understood. So I packed my stuff up, and I kissed my mom goodbye, and I said, I'll be back, and she knew I wouldn't, and I wasn't. I never came back. I moved back to Atlanta when I was 18, I worked at the Waffle House at 85 in Claremont, lived at the Claremont Lounge there, which is the Days Inn that was converted, and was exposed to a lot of alcoholics and a lot of really interesting people. And again, I did not drink. My father had gotten sober by then, and he was a real preachy big bunk thumper. And anything that went wrong, it was sort of like, oh, I'm an alcoholic. And anything that went good, it was because of the program. And it was that way for the next 25-ish years. He was that kind of alcoholic. He just put all of his faith in God, dropped out of life, walked the earth, and just had sponsees. That was it. That was pretty much what he did. He was not a good poster child for me for AA. And as a matter of fact, I had gone to some meetings with him, the old Clarkston group, the old Clarkston group when it was actually on Ponce. And you guys were all just like old people who smoked and bitched a lot. I mean, I was 15, 17. I didn't really... this was never going to be for me, ever. So I bring that up to say that when I came into this program finally, I did not like alcoholics. I was one and still hated them. Very self-loathing. It was a very interesting dichotomy that I had. So I'm on my own. I'm 18. I have almost very little real training, no life preparedness at all. $150 in my pocket, no place to live. Girl broke up with me the week I moved back. And just didn't want to go back home. I was on my own. And I kind of liked it that way because when I turned 18, I didn't blame anybody else. I was responsible for myself. And I was one of those kids who woke up and felt different at 18. I was like, all right, this is on me now. And I've sort of always shouldered that burden. Here and there, I had jobs here and there. I never graduated high school, but the one good thing that the ex made me do was go get my GED, which I'm really grateful for, because that allowed me to go to college later, which I did. I was working in the movie industry, doing special effects, and I was focused on what I was doing. Never had time for parties, never drank, occasionally did some acid and mushrooms and stuff, just like at parties. Once every 6 months or a year. Nothing that would indicate a problem. The first time I tried alcohol, I was a teenager. I was 16 and my mom went overseas to visit my older brother who was in the Navy and had just had her first grandchild and left me alone with the house for 2 weeks. So, I mean, I'd seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I know what guys do. You throw a party, which I did. And it was about 8-9 people. And we were doing tequila shots the way they do them in the movies, you know, which is the only way I'd ever seen anybody ever drink tequila, which is with, like, the lime and the salt. But I drank tequila one other time in my life, but that was the first. It was horrible. I could hear ants crawling across the floor the next morning. I threw up, felt horrible, and it was, I didn't feel that like, oh, I'm somebody. It was just, it was bad. I did not like being hungover or drunk, which should have been a strong enough indicator, but it wasn't. So I was lucky, I was blessed, I was smart, I could get through things, I could solve problems pretty easily, and had struggles, of course, like I think a lot of us do. And when I met a friend group, and all of them were going to college, and I sort of felt left out. So I decided to apply to art school, which is funny because they'll just let you in if you want to go to art school and you can pay them, they will let you in. I needed zero training and zero skill. But I did like art and design, and I went to school here in Atlanta. I was in for 2 years, graduated, did really well, enjoyed it. In that period of time, I still wasn't drinking. I was drinking a little bit in college, but I was mostly just having fun. Like wholesome fun, like sober fun, like the fun we used to have that I forgot how to have from 25 to 40. Because when I graduated college, the internet was just starting, and I got hired by IBM at a lot of money that they should never offer a 25-year-old inexperienced person, like $80,000 a year. We have zero idea what to do with it. So I worked all the time, and I drank. I learned how to drink. I started dating this fast-talking redhead from Chicago that I was just enamored with from the moment I met her. And I had never gone to bars. I just didn't. It wasn't where I went. My dad took me to hotel bars when he would get us for weekend visits. I never understood why until I became an alcoholic. And I was like, oh, okay, that's right. Because he runs an expense account, because he was a mortgage banker. So he would go and drink like crazy. So we always go to like the Radisson or something. And it's just like old school alcoholic style. Johnny's Hideaway kind of drinkers. And so I met this woman, and she's like, we're going to go to the Euclid Avenue Yacht Club. And I was like, that sounds cool. So we went. And man, that was a blast. I didn't know how fun bars were. And to this day, I still think bars are awesome. I ended up being a drummer in a band for several years, and we used to play at bars 3 times a week. The dingier, the better. I used to play at like Dottie's and the Dark Horse and Smith's Old Bar and places like that, Somber Reptile. And it was just, I never drank before I played. I was very, very structured in where in areas that I could be. When we were done with the show, I would get hammered. I mean, just hammered. I was never a beer drinker. One beer would make me throw up. But I could drink a bottle of vodka, not a problem. No problem at all. And if you mix it with something, it was even better because it tasted nice and sweet. So I started from 25 to 30. I pretty much visited every bar in Atlanta. And between the recession and the year 2000 and 2002, I became a bartender. I loved everything about bars. Still do. I think they're great. I think for people who can handle it, they're a good social watering hole for people. I'm just not one of them. I lost that right, thankfully. As life does, it progresses, and it does not always blossom without thorns. And every time I hit any type of snag in life, I did not have any coping mechanism. I did not have any way of handling stress, which I had a lot of, strife, which I had enough of, relationship issues, which I had plenty of. So I drank a lot. I was never a morning drinker. I was never a lunch drinker. I would work. Never lost a job because of alcohol. I never understood that, because if I lost my job, then I couldn't drink. So always had to kind of keep it in between the lines of drinking. And I'm a graphic artist for trade. And at the time, it's sort of a... most companies still see that as a mystical job. So as long as you don't fuck up directly, they don't fire you. Like, they just sort of, oh, he's an artist. He's a little quirky. Oh, he hasn't showered in 2 weeks. It's okay, he's an artist. You know, like. So I came in hungover pretty much every day of my life for 15 years. But I never drank on the job. I would leave work earlier and earlier and earlier. I had many 3 in the afternoon, end of the work days after I started at 10. But drinking became my fix it all. And it worked. I had a lot of fun drinking. I did the craziest shit with the craziest people. I used to hang out with motorcycle riders, professionals, race car drivers. I was a very social person. I could meet anybody and talk all night. I've heard women say when they drank it made them prettier, wittier, and tittier. There's got to be like a guy version of that, because that's how I felt when I drank. And I don't know what pushed me to the limit. I knew that I had held off for a long time, but when I started drinking with this girl, just stuff felt right. I felt good. I felt like the world was pushed back and that I could react to it well enough, properly. I didn't feel like I was the bow of a ship getting shoved through life. And I liked that. And I liked that for a long time. And I chased that feeling for a really long time. I didn't like getting drunk. I love getting buzzed, but I don't like getting drunk. So I would drink steadily, but not overdo it. The problem with drinking steady is that you drink steady from 5 in the afternoon till 4 in the morning, 9 hours a day, for over 10 years. It takes a toll on your body. When I got sober, the reason I came in was because my liver and my kidneys were hurting. I was not healthy. I knew I was not healthy. I was 39 years old, and I knew that I was killing myself slowly. The problem was is that I knew I was an alcoholic by the time I was 32, 33. And at times I didn't care. I said that I didn't care. But the real thing was that I just didn't want to be like my father. I could not give up on life and go sit in a room with a bunch of pissed off old guys smoking cigarettes, hating life. Because that was my exposure to AA. Now, I'd known what AA was my whole life, and I had a respect for it because it did do wonders for my father, as in, we didn't get hit, but we got an ear full of God and stuff. My spiritual life was that I was an altar boy and worked Catholic and then Episcopalian, which is Catholic light, and then by the time I was 15, I was smart enough to realize that this was all bullshit, and read some philosophy books and some Nietzsche, and that was kind of it for God for a long time. I did practice. I was a practicing spiritualist, I guess you would say. I did metaphysics a lot. So I believe in the spirit and the soul and eternity. So I'd always known there was a higher power out there. It's just I always thought AA was God because my father was very Christian. So I thought that's what that was. It was a conversion thing. And I also thought that it was a bill of goods, that you'd have to become a goody two-shoes. And I was really, really grateful when my sister became a junkie and ended up in this program. And she worked this program pretty well for a couple of years. And then my other sister woke up to the fact that she was an alcoholic and came in. And I got to see them get sober from afar. My younger brother, who I was pretty close to, he was from a second marriage. He drank like I drank. We hung out together. He was a fighter. I was the mouth and he was the brawn. So we would go out in the streets and I would pick fights and just sort of step back. And Tommy would come in wailing. It was great. It's like having your own bulldog on a chain. He drank like I drank and he got sober. And I got to literally see him get sober. And I was like, so it's not giving up life. And he's like, no, man, I still work my ass off, still have friends. And I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot. I had to overcome that and watch somebody who I believed and trusted come into this program and have their life changed. And that's what happens. The specifics of the morning, it could have been any Sunday. The one that I happened to get sober on was the 15th. And it was funny as hell because I woke up and it's like, you know, woke up bright and early on a Sunday at 2 in the afternoon and could not see anything. But I leaped out of bed. I literally leapt out of bed. And I went and I stood and I stared at myself in the mirror and I said, I'm done. It's been the same Sunday for 6 years. The exact same Sunday. I was getting nowhere in life. I had worked. I'd had several jobs. I've had a lot of money. I've had no money. I was prepared for whatever life threw my way under those circumstances, and I knew for a fact that under those circumstances, life was never going to throw me anything good, and that had to change. So I went over to Triangle Club. I'd known about it. I heard about it. Home of the Fatally Hip. And I sat on the front porch. I went to a meeting, which I don't really remember, but Kenny Thomas, the real alcoholic, talk to me for a little while, and he likes to tell the story. I was beet red and smelled like vodka for 3 weeks when I started coming in. And I met a guy from Complete Abandon who was like, hey, come on over to our home group. So I went. I didn't know any better. And I was there for 6 months. And ironically, it was like AA boot camp. It's what I needed at the time. It was hard. I do not like being forced through round holes. I am a square peg. Stayed sober. Wasn't comfortable. Didn't do any steps. But I learned that there's a socialization to this program that's really important. And then you can commit to things and you can start your journey however you start this journey, as long as the journey has started. Coming up on 10 years sober, and one thing that I've learned, and I've learned it as a fact, and I was taught it 8 years ago, but I didn't listen, but I completely believe it, is nothing can make you drink if you want to stay sober, and nothing can make you sober if you want to drink. When I came in, I would call myself an atheist. I didn't really believe in anything benevolent. Force of the universe, yada yada, sure, but not with intelligence. But I went. I went to AA every day, an hour before a meeting, hour after a meeting, 7 days a week for 6 months. And then I had enough, and I was like, see ya. So I left. I was lucky enough to find Noble. Many of you guys know Noble. This was his home group for a long time. Great man. He's like, well, it sounds like you need to work some steps. So I was like, yeah, I do. I do, because I'm gonna kill myself if I have to stay in this situation, or I'm going to kill others. It's much more like me to kill others. I'm way afraid of dying. So I did. I came out. I got sober. I got genuinely sober. I read through the whole book with my sponsor. Worked all the steps. Dragged my feet on the first three were relatively straightforward. You don't come in drinking a fifth of vodka a day or a handle on a Saturday without really realizing you're an alcoholic. People don't drink that way. And when you're not drinking and you're thinking about drinking all the time, I was an alcoholic. I just had stuff. You can be smarter than the drink. I didn't lose everything. I had friends I could use. I had access to money I could use for the time being. I hurt a lot of people. I used a lot of people. The way I was raised, it was root little pig or die. And that's sort of the way that kept with me through life. If you were stupid enough to get used, then you deserve to get used. And if I was smart enough to get away with it, then it wasn't a bad thing. Got that all wrong. The only reason I'm up here today is because I have friends and I try and give everything I can to those people. Anything I try and keep for myself always goes away. It's like dust. It's the strangest thing. I was just talking to a buddy of mine. It makes no sense that this program works. There's nothing rooted in anything logical that makes this program work. And it works every day. Every time. So I started my journey. I've been through, I think, 4 sponsors. They kind of flow through my life, move away, that kind of stuff. But the sponsors really don't matter. They become friends, and there are people I talk to, and they talk to you, and they give you guidance. But the truth is that as long as you're seeking, you'll find. And when you're ready to learn, someone will show up. I've learned that as well. So I started going through the book with Noble. Did my first 4th and 5th step after I was about 18 months sober. I put it off for 9 months. In the period of time that I got sober to now, I have lived in 3 different states. I have owned 4 different homes, 3 different homes, which I had never owned anything prior to that. I've had open heart surgery. I've lost a father and a mother. and I lost my very, very best dog of 10 years. And I know that sounds silly, but any of you have ever owned a dog, that's the most painful thing I've ever let myself experience. And not one of those times, through any of that stuff, have I drank. I've wanted to drink a lot. I do not lie. I'm up here. I'm an alcoholic. When pushed, my first solution is always to drink. And then I tell my brain to shut up and I pray. I first found God at a big book study in my sponsor's basement living room. We were reading a chapter called To the Employers. And I don't know what happened. While we were reading, afterwards, I was talking to Noble, and I grew up with a lot of rage and anger and hatred and resentment towards my father, and to the extent that I would cripple my own self to not be like him. And while I was reading this chapter, there was something about forgiveness, and I just sort of understood for a second, just for a split second. And I felt a thread being pulled out of the top of my head. It was the strangest sensation I had ever experienced. And all the memories of everything that my father had ever done that I blamed him for doing to me and my family were still there. But none of the hatred was there. All of the rage was gone. All of the anger. I called him up the next day and asked him if he'd want to do lunch. I mean, it was just gone. God had removed from me, physically, removed from me, a lifetime of hate. So then I was in a quandary because that meant this shit worked. I was like, all right, I guess we'll do the rest of them. So I did. And, I had a pretty reasonable experience. I think after 4 and 5, you find that after my 4 and 5 wasn't that long. I didn't blame a lot of people for my life. I didn't have a lot of resentments, just some big ones. I had a handful of boulders, not a lot of pebbles. When I was done with my 5th step, I've walked into every AA clubhouse ever since and never once thought I didn't belong. I could sit in any chair. I'll start a conversation with anybody. I do not care. I have done a 5th step, and I know it, and I belong. I've earned that seat. I've done an 8th and many 9ths, which just solidifies the seat. It's a great thing, and for those of you that haven't done the full steps, they seem daunting, but they're so rewarding. They're simple. They're the simplest, hardest thing you'll ever do. 10, 11, and 12. 3, 7, and 11 are my favorite steps. Because after that night, I could not, with an open mind, say there was no higher power working for me in my life. And if it's there, I'm going to rely on it. So I've relied on it ever since. I keep a little, just sits on my shoulder. I talk to him all day. It's a lot more sane than just talking to yourself. And when the answers come, you just kind of go forward and do it. Just guide me, direct me. What am I supposed to do here? What am I supposed to say here? 10, 11, and 12 I love. I do 10 every day. Love it. It's a great way to unwind from the night. 11 and 12 keep me honest. And 12, I don't have enough sponsees, but I have as many as I can. I've worked with a lot of guys. I've got one sponsee who's been sober for 5 years, 5.5 years last week. And that guy's been through a lot of shit. My life is cake compared to him. And I love it because it gives me a chance to be genuine and honest with another man who's struggling and watch him right-size his life, right-side the boat. I don't have anything to do with it. I'm just there. I've learned just to be a conduit if I can. I take no credit for anything I do, and I take no credit for my own sobriety. All I do is don't drink. The quality of my life today is very dependent on much I'm giving to others, when I'm alone, when I feel lonely. I don't have to ever feel lonely, but I feel lonely a lot. And when I do, it's because I want something for me. And if I just go out and help somebody else, I'm never alone. There's always people to help. I can go, I just come to clubhouses and sit there in the middle of the afternoon, just talk to people. It's cheaper than cable. Just never feel alone. This program, I'm not mushy enough to say it saved my life, but it definitely defined my life. It gave me a structure that I desperately needed, and it gave me the ability to meet and interact with people that I would not otherwise. And it gave me an honest, realistic view of what my life could be like and what my life was going to be like. God doesn't waste anything. When you see guys relapse and die, and I've seen that a lot, just a reminder of what was going to happen to me. There's a chapter, there's a page in this book that's unnumbered, and it's called They Stopped in Time, and it's set between the two sets of stories, the first two sets of stories. And it says that we don't have to go all the way to the bottom. We don't have to fall and lose everything. You can see the oncoming train and step off the tracks before getting squished. So gratefully, when I did come in, I hadn't lost everything outwardly, which is a bit of a help because I was dead inside. I remember being a small, screaming, little black void. I had very little self-respect. I had almost nothing but self-reliance, and self-reliance is only as good as it goes. Today, I've, through God, through the steps, through working with others, through taking advice from my sponsor, through helping my sponsee, I have a social group that would bend over backwards for me anytime I need them. I do my best not to ask. We always volunteer to help each other, even when people don't need help. It almost gets annoying. I have healthy relationships, which is to say that I have relationships, and when there's strife and struggle, I pray, I talk about it. I come from the angle of how can I be supportive to you as opposed to what is this doing to me? I am not like this 24 hours a day. I wake up angry. I wake up frustrated. I wake up full of rage, and I pray the second my eyes open, God, please direct me in thought and action. You know my heart. You know where I'm at. Show me the way. And if I can do that before I even say anything, I'm balanced. And then I meditate. Look for general direction or specific direction with things ahead, 24 hours. Money comes and goes. People come and die. People live and die. Who I am is a completely different person than who I was when I came in. I tried to keep as much of the cool stuff as I could, but I was pretty hollow, so it was pretty vapid to begin with. The steps just open the world. Because first you're just dealing with yourself, and it's just me, me, me. Is this going to work for me? I don't know if it's going to work for me. And then they're not kidding. It's just that simple. It's the blueprint for life. When I get down, sad, depressed, lonely, all I have to do is walk into a clubhouse. This is the part that makes no sense. And just feel better. Just being, I know four of you in this room. And I feel like I'm at home. I can say any of this without any type of hesitation. I don't have that anywhere else in my life. And so many other people who need this don't have it either. I'm so grateful that we do. But it does make no sense. It makes no sense that when I am scared and frightened, that if I pick up the phone and think of another alcoholic, call them, ask how they're doing, within minutes, I'm okay. I forget what the hell I was upset about. because I just listen to someone else. I'm a big fan of fact. There's empirical and proven fact, but there's also experience. And my experiences have taught me that a lot of this spiritual stuff is just right on the money. My comprehension of it, still this big. God is everywhere and huge. And I'm grateful for what little understanding I have. And I'm grateful that I have more understanding today than I had yesterday. And I pray that I have more understanding tomorrow than I do today. I don't miss drinking. I don't miss headaches. I don't miss making a mess of my life. I'm grateful that I did it, because I couldn't be here if I didn't. I could have just stubbornly refused and marched towards an early death. I'm genuinely surprised I didn't, because that's much more my personality back then. But I'm thankful. And any of you who know me, the handful in this room, is not big on gratitude. I'm not big on gratitude lists. I'm not big on gratitude meetings, because I believe that gratitude is a verb, something others see in you. It's like humility. But I can be grateful. I just don't like to let it out that much. But I am incredibly thankful and grateful to be here today. And I'm glad you guys listen to me. It's not as exciting as a lot of stories, but it's mine. And y'all can have it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Did I end okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Tim, for keeping it real. Shared your heart and soul. And John's going to hand out the chips.
Hey everybody, my name is John. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
We use chips here to denote our time in sobriety. The white chip is the first one we offer. It's for just if you want to try this way of life one day at a time, or you're coming back after a little more experimentation, got a white chip. All right, the 30 days and nights, we have a third chip. Hey!
Congratulations.
Anybody else? 30 days? 60 days, we have a bronze-ish chip. Anybody have 90 days today? 6 months? Yellow chip. 9 months for green chip. Anybody have a birthday we don't know about? Or multiple? All right, I'm going to offer the white chip again, because it's really important, and it's free.
Oh, I want it. It's free.
Yeah.
See, it worked. There you go, man. Keep coming back.
Thank you. I've never seen that work before. That's all. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the chip, you all.
Thank you, John. Good choice. Good choice. And congratulations on 30 days.
First I slip and then I crib to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me and finally wake and there I see. Look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window takes me where the promises are in. And I always long for something to set me free. Take me where the promises are.